Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download the Shiny Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download the Shiny Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Shiny Radio app for free now.
Welcome to the Marriage and More podcast with your hosts, Sterling and Soretta Smith, where they talk about love, life, marriage, and a whole lot more.
What's up? Welcome to Marriage and More with your hosts,
Sterling
and Soretta Smith, where we talk about love, life, marriage,
and a whole lot more.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to tune into the show today. You can always download the app at your app store, Bashani Radio app. Get the app so you can listen, you know, any place, any day, any time, anywhere. And you can always go to BashaniRadio.com. And then they have a new, what are those things you call? The QR code thingy? Yeah, Bashani Radio is on the move.
They have a QR code?
We can just be walking in the airport and say, here, scan my app and listen to my show. It's just that simple.
Okay, technology is big time.
Yeah.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah.
You gotta keep up with the time.
Yeah, so look, let everybody know about the show. As Sterling and I always say, we are not licensed therapists
or
clinicians.
Nope.
We just two people that have been together for 30 years, married for 28 years, heading into 30 years here in a couple of years, and just, you know, thought, hey, let's do a podcast where we can share and talk about stuff. Sometimes it's stuff that, you know, people don't want to talk about. And so we're going to bring in and keep it real here and talk about it real life, real time. So what's going on, Mrs. Smith?
Oh, nothing. Just moving into the holiday and looking forward for some time off and rolling out on vacation.
Absolutely. A much, much needed vacation, a well-deserved vacation. I think we've both been working hard and grinding and I won't say grinding, but working hard and just doing what you do in life to make sure that we live a good life. And so we are just so excited about that. And that brings us to a topic that I want to talk about. We are about to enter into the Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day weekend.
This upcoming weekend and before the show airs again.
What do they call it? The official end of the summer?
Yeah, that's what they call it. But I want to talk more about the significance of it, what Labor Day means, how it got started, because it's really important. And I don't want people to just celebrate it as another holiday. I want people to actually understand Labor Day. What does Labor Day mean? I mean, if I remember for a long, long time growing up as a child and a kid and a teenager, I didn't know what Labor Day was about. I just looked at it as, like you said, the last weekend of the summer, another day off and a time to celebrate until I became involved in unions.
Yeah, I just associated with going back to school, the beginning of the new school year.
Yeah, because some people, you know, in different parts of the country, they go back to school after Labor Day. And so I am a part of the American Federation of Government Employees. It's the largest federal government union in the entire world. And in the United States of America as well. And so I worked for the federal government. Both Sterling and I are both veterans, both served in the United States Army. But I went on, and Sterling for a short time as well was a federal government employee. And so I got involved and engaged and active in the union. And this is where I learned the history of Labor Day and the history of unions. And so I wanted to do a show as we're, you know, this is the more, we said marriage and more, so this is the more part as we move into the Labor Day weekend, because I want our listeners to know what Labor Day is about, the history of it, why we celebrate it, and the importance of unions, not just in America, but across the country. And we're seeing more companies and corporations, their workers are starting to organize and unionize, because they too see the value and the worth in having and being a part of a union. So Labor Day is observed the first Monday in September. It's an annual celebration of the social and economic achievement of American workers. The holiday is rooted in the late 19th century when labor activists, that's what I am, y'all, a labor activist, pushed for a federal holiday to recognize the many contributions workers have made to America's strength, prosperity, and well-being. That's something in this, Roland.
Yes, I mean, this country is built on the backs of workers. Workers and the labor that they do.
Right, yeah.
I mean, we wouldn't exist if it wasn't for laborers.
Right, working families. And so I've been out here advocating for working families. And Labor Day is important. But before it was a federal holiday, it was recognized by labor activists in individual states. So there were municipal ordinances that were passed in 1885 and 1886. And then a movement developed to get state legislatures to buy into this. And New York was the first state to introduce a bill. And then Oregon was the first to pass a law actually recognizing Labor Day on February 21st, 1887. And during 1887, four more states, Colorado, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York, passed laws creating a Labor Day holiday. And by the end of the decade, Connecticut, Nebraska, and Pennsylvania followed suit. And by 1894, 23 more states had adopted the holiday. And on June 28th, 1894, Congress passed an act making the first Monday in September of each year a legal holiday. And so I want to tell folks, you know, about labor, about unions. Again, I'm a part of a union. And if you go back and you look at the history of even slavery, like it was about work.
Yes.
Free labor, right? And so even after the Emancipation Proclamation, and we know that's why we have Juneteenth, because there were slaves in Texas who were still working, providing free labor because they did not know that they had been freed. And they didn't want to let them go because it was free labor. And so that's what the struggle and the fight of slavery was all about, was free labor. And so if you go back and study the history of labor, and you look at how there was child labor, children were even forced into labor, free labor, or the wages may as well have been for free.
There were no rules.
There were no laws that governed the age, how young a person could be, how many hours a day, how many days a week. There was nothing to guarantee them good wages. They were paid whatever the employer felt like paying them. We're not even going to talk about leave, holiday leave, sick leave, vacation time. Those things were not heard of.
It was all about work.
There was all about work and
maximizing a person's ability to do something for you.
For much of nothing. For much of nothing was the thing, though. It was that they worked people to the dog. They worked people to death. You know, when we say that, you know, I feel like I'm working to death. There are people that literally worked, you know, they're people who that they work for, the people that they work for literally worked them to death. And so, you know, unions stood up and they said, hey, we're not going to put up with this. You're not going to treat people like this. People have rights. And so they began to organize and they began to get together and they began to step up and fight back and push back. You know, women really did a lot in terms of labor and unions, and probably one of the most, or not the most famous woman in labor, they called her Mother Jones. Her name was Mary Harris, Mother Jones. And she was this lady. She used to wear these black dresses with the lace collar and the black hat. She was all, you know, she was barely 5 feet tall. And she was a very fearless fighter for workers' rights. And at one point, Sterling, they called her the most dangerous woman in America. A U.S. district attorney called her that. And she rose to prominence because, you know, she was this really spirited orator. She was fearless. And she helped to organize the mine workers during the first two decades of the 20th century. And she had a great, her voice really carried great power. You know, she was this woman who was very, had a lot of energy when she was very passionate. And she's inspired men to follow her and compel them and their wives to join in the struggle. She said that if that didn't work, she would embarrass men to action. She said, I have been in jail more than once and I expect to go again. If you are too cowardly to fight, I will fight. That's what she told him.
It sounds like Mother Jones, her attitude was, I will not be denied, or my people that are following me in this labor push movement, we will not be denied by any means necessary. Because she was willing to go to jail and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
She stood up for the worker.
Yeah. And, you know, she organized, she welcomed African-American workers, and she involved women and children in her strike. And so, you know, her method was unique. She organized miners' wives into teams, and she armed them with maps and brooms to guard the mines. She staged parades with children carrying signs that read, we want to go to school and not to the mines. Because remember, we talked about child labor.
Child labor, yes.
Yeah. So these kids were not being allowed to go to school. They were being forced to go work in mines. So she was a very, very powerful woman in the labor movement.
In other words, Mother Jones was light years ahead of her time.
Yeah.
As far as being an organizer, a galvanizer of people. She just had that zest about her. She had that leadership. It was just embedded in her, and people was willing to follow her because she was a strong, personable lady.
Yeah. Another a group of women, because, you know, women have been powerful in labor, that I want to mention is the Atlanta Atlanta Washerwomen, the Atlanta Washerwomen. And so when, you know, with the official end of slavery, less than two decades before, thousands of black laundresses went on strike for higher wages, respect for their work and control over how their work was organized. And so in the summer of 1881, the laundresses took on Atlanta's business and political establishment, and they gained a lot of support. They threatened to call a general strike, which would have shut the city of Atlanta down. And so just a little bit of history about the laundresses in Atlanta. Atlanta in the early 1880s was beginning to develop, and the city had primitive water and sewer systems. Unsanitary trash lined the streets. Atlanta's businessmen and politicians sought to paint a very different picture to lure. They were trying to lure northern businesses to come to their city. So they spotlighted it, you know, as an urban center of the New South with a large subservient workforce. And so more than half of the city's black residents and half of the black wage earners were women at this time. And black women largely were responsible for sustaining not only their families, but their communities as well. One third of black women living in Atlanta, like in other cities, raised their families alone. So in the city of Atlanta, laundresses worked long, tiring hours, and their wages ranged from $4 to $8 a month. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Wow.
Because remember, they're fresh out of slavery, and they were still trying to push that narrative that slavery was the right way to go. So they were still going to try to abuse the black people and black women as a whole still.
Wow. $4 to $8 a month. And so we know that these wages change little over time, and the laundresses would increase their earnings by adding on clients and getting help from their children. Laundresses worked mostly in their homes or in their neighborhoods with other women. They worked outside in the shade when weather permitted, or inside their homes, hanging clothes all over the house to dry. They made their own soap from lye, starch from wheat bran, and wash tubs from beer barrels cut in half. I mean, these women were
creative,
innovative, industrious,
ingenuitive,
entrepreneurial.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, entrepreneurial. And so throughout the week, they would carry gallons of water from wells, pumps or hydrants for washing, boiling, and rinsing clothes. Then after hanging the clothes to dry, the women would iron, alternately using several heavy irons at a time. So, you know, these women,
they figured out how to get it done.
Yeah, yeah. But in July of 1881, 20 laundresses met to form a trade organization, the Washing Society. They sought higher pay, respect, and autonomy over their work, and established a uniform rate of $1 per dozen pounds of wash. And with the help of black ministers throughout the city, they held a mass meeting and called a strike to achieve higher pay at the uniform rate. And the Washing Society, or Washing Amazons, as their opponents call them, they established door-to-door canvassing to widen their membership, urging other laundresses across the city to join and honor the strike. They also involved white laundresses, who were less than 2% of laundresses in the city. And it was an extraordinary sign of interracial solidarity for the time. And in 3 weeks, the Washing Society grew from 20 to 3,000 strikers. Organized, organized, organized. That's awesome.
Strength in numbers. They figured it out.
Yeah. And so by August, municipal authorities were taking direct action. They started arresting them, fining them. But they weren't deterred. These women were not deterred. The city council proposed that members of any washerman's organization pay an annual fee of $25, and then offered nonprofit tax status to business that wanted to start commercial laundresses. Even though the $25 fee would mean several months of wages, the strikers weren't discouraged. These women were not discouraged. They responded with a letter to the mayor, agreeing to pay the fee rather than be defeated. We mean business or no washing, the letter stated. And these political savvy women workers were willing to pay the fee in exchange for self-regulation. And to them, self-regulation of their industry was about respect. And so, yeah, you can read some more of the history, but that was one of the...
You started off by saying they wanted autonomy, and they got it.
Yeah, they got it. Yeah. So Mother Jones and the Atlanta washerwomen, they're just a couple of, you know, women that I wanted to talk about who were influential in the labor movement and what, you know, what it looked like back then. And so labor is still alive. I just read something that 71% of Americans are in favor of labor unions. And that says a lot. 71% of Americans believe in what labor unions stand for. And like we said earlier in the show, like you wouldn't have sick leave. We wouldn't have vacation time. We wouldn't have 40-hour, you know, work weeks. We wouldn't have paid vacations. We wouldn't have lunch breaks. Wouldn't have lunch breaks. Wouldn't have those, you know, 30-minute breaks, 15-minute breaks that are required by law. We wouldn't have retirement.
Or legitimate vacation time.
Wouldn't have health benefits.
Yes.
So, health. You know, labor does a lot. And, you know, when you look at folks who are part of unions, when you look at their wages, when you look at the amount of money that they make, they tend to make more money because they have someone that's at the table that is bargaining on their behalf. They tend to have safer working conditions because they have someone that's bargaining at the table on their behalf to make sure that they have these safe working conditions. So, you know, because I'm labor, because I'm a part of a union and a part of a national network, I just wanted to, you know, I told Sterling, hey, let's talk about Labor Day for this show as we move into this Labor Day weekend. And so certainly it is the last weekend of summer before we, you know, kick into fall. And it is, you know, a time to get together and just enjoy family. But I want to make sure that we all understand, because like I said, for years, I didn't know what Labor Day was. I didn't know what it was about. I didn't know the history. And so if there's anybody out there listening, I hope this kind of opened your eyes to, you know, the history, if you didn't know about the history, and makes you appreciate all of these folks that came before, the Mother Jones and the Washerwomen and the all the folks that came before who stood up to people that were trying to take advantage of workers and children and women.
Just taking advantage of people in general.
Yeah. And just trying to get free labor. And at the cost and on the backs of other people, and while they, you know, get rich. And so, yeah, that's it.
Someone and people came together and they could see beyond the job. They could see, they were envisioning down the road that, hey, we have to do something or they're going to work us to death. That was the ultimate goal of I'll work you to death and I'll find somebody else. They really didn't care about their workers.
Yeah. And, you know, you still have, I've run into managers like that. You know, I've heard people that had valid concerns and complaints about safety in the workplace, violations of policies. And I've actually heard supervisors say, well, if you don't like how we do things here, if you don't like how we do things here, then go find somewhere else to work. And, you know, that to me, that speaks to, you know, those are the types of leaders that they really don't care about people. They just see them as, you know,
tools.
Right. Yeah. And then like, hey,
you're a number. That's
you're
all you
just
are.
A number.
You're just a number.
And so, yeah, if you're a manager, a supervisor listening out there, you know, but most of the time when you find someone like that, you know, it's something in their childhood or something that's happened to them in their life where they've lost the ability or the capacity to be able to see a person as a human being and to have empathy. And so it's a little bit deeper. And, you know, hopefully if you're working for somebody like that, understand that it's not you. You know, more than likely it's not you. If you're coming to work on time and doing everything you need to do, more than likely it's not you. Some people just use their job as their place to come. And if they were bullied, so now they come to work and their supervisor and they're just going to be a bully.
They live their life through their job.
Yeah.
That validates them.
Yeah.
Bullying people on the job.
And that's why we have unions. So call your union representative. Find out if you got a union. Join the union. Mm-hmm. Call your union representative. And let them be an advocate for you.
Yes.
And so, hey, I urge you, if you're not a member of a union, join a union.
Get involved
with unions. They do some great things. Don't believe the hype. Do your research. Happy Labor Day.
Yes, happy Labor Day. Someone or some organization had to regulate management. And union stepped up and did it.
All right. Well, listen, we hope you guys and gals have a safe Labor Day weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Sterling and I are out on vacation, and we're going to talk a lot about that when we get back from vacation. And stay tuned after we give our marriage mantra. I'm sorry, my tongue is all tied today. Stay tuned after we give our marriage mantra to listen to some information on how you can follow us on social media. Again, happy Labor Day. And our marriage mantra goes a little something like this.
The more you put into your marriage,
the more you're going to get out of your marriage. Happy Labor Day.
Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to the Marriage and More podcast with Sterling and Soretta Smith. Follow Sterling and Soretta on Instagram and Facebook at Marriage and More with Sterling and Soretta.
Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download Bashani Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download Bashani Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Bashani Radio app for free now.